Blog Talk Radio.
Fasten your seatbelts. The foremost authority on 9/11, the best-selling author of Methodical Illusion, and a researcher extraordinaire, Rebecca Roth is about to step up to the microphone and launch into Reality Check, where the light will shine brightly upon the truth.
Live from the Oakmont Country Club, just outside of Pittsburgh, it's the home of the 2016 U.S. Open. It's the Rebecca Roth Show. And with me is Rebecca Roth.
Well, thank you, Ramjet. Hey, Pennsylvania.
Hey, it's been a little miserable. The weather's been bad all week.
And golf, eh?
Well, the U.S. Open, nothing gets better than that. See if Jordan Spieth can repeat.
That would be good.
Awesome.
That would be great.
Or if maybe Phil Mickelson can come out of nowhere and finally win his last major that he's never won.
Well, let's...
But I'm not going to cross my fingers.
I was going to say, let's not hold our breath, but we sure would like to see that. That would be kind of fun. Okay, well, welcome to the Rebecca Roth Show. It's just our pleasure to have you join us again. And, wow. Now, talk about timely. Last week, we did a show. And it was asking you, are you safer today? And we talked about the Department of Homeland Security. And the size of it, the scope of it, what they do, and how bad they're failing. You know, we talked about them running the border control, the immigrations and customs and security around our nuclear plants and all kinds of stuff like that.
Did you just George Bush that?
Yeah, nuclear. Oh, it's a George Bush. I love that, Peanut Man. So anyway, we no sooner finished that show, and then the next day, or just actually hours later, there was the most incredible event happening down in Orlando, Florida. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. I almost hate to because it seems like everybody with a YouTube channel is talking about it. But, you know, after doing the research that I've done personally about 9/11, and I've told this to many, many people, because when people read The Methodical Illusion, they often contact me and they say, OMG, oh my God, now what do I do? Now that my eyes are open and I can start to see, and that is what I tell people, that's what happened to me, and what happens is it's just, I don't even know, it's like a veil is lifted, and once the 9/11 truth is in you and you're aware of the capabilities and the false flag and all of this, the trickery and all of that, you start to look at everything else. So for me, having at one time in my life been a first responder, I, of course, look with eyes of a first responder. I did see lots of things on the Orlando shooting that were crazy, and I happened to be watching it live when it happened online. So I was, you know, aware the moment it happened. I actually saw that RT, Russia Today, had it before CNN on the computer. So,
well, you know, it's even more insidious than what you've just mentioned, because in your next book that someday will come out soon, I'm sure you'll give us an update at some point. But, you know, you go into in-depth about the CIA and the CIA involvement in 9/11 and some of the things you have discovered as a result of your research. And they are just absolutely bastards. And I, you know, I don't even like to use that word, but I can't think of anything better that describes them. And I think you're going to find that they were involved in this particular...
Yeah, well, it's quite possible. But it may not be actually the official CIA. One of the things that I also uncovered is that there's a rogue element. These are people that have been in the CIA that were there for a while or there as interns, and now they're out somewhere else. Some of them are in the media, like Anderson Cooper, for example. Anderson Cooper was a CIA intern for a few years, and then he's now sitting in the media. So one of the things you'll find is people like Eric Prince, who started Blackwater. And after Blackwater and Akamai intelligence or Akamai, I'm not even sure what they call that, but it's like a rogue CIA type operation where they do black operations and mercenaries. They hire mercenaries. And one of the things I found looking into Eric Prince, I hate to say this, but around the time that we started hearing about ISIS, when they first came on the scene, maybe it was 2 years ago now, they were 800 strong. Well, one of the things I was researching about him one day, I just got that down that rabbit hole, the Eric Prince Blackwater rabbit hole, because of some connections that I had stumbled into on my 9/11 research for this third book. So as I'm looking at that, lo and behold, Eric Prince, now he started that company Blackwater, and then it's changed names three or four times, XE something or other. I can't remember all the names. Akademi, I think, is the current name or one of the names he's had. But around the time that ISIS showed up, he had been down in Somalia, and he had just trained, coinkydinky, 800 mercenaries in Somalia to stop the, remember all the pirating that they had in the Gulf of Aden a few years back? Well, he went down there to start this. Now, he's operating outside the realm of the Central Intelligence Agency. He's a private contractor. And this is what's happened with intelligence agencies, in particular, that type of mercenary work. Is you've got these, he's the son of a billionaire, so he's didn't have to go to work. Maybe he's a psychopath. I don't know what causes him to do this. But coinkydinky, he had trained 800 mercenaries to stop the pirating outside the Gulf of, in and amongst the Gulf of Aden. Well, a few months after that, 800, coinkydink, mercenaries showed up under the name, under the flag of ISIS. Now, see, when I started looking at ISIS, there were 800 of them that we first found out about them. I wondered who made all their flags. Because, you know, there's a couple colonial flags, and I think they're in Utah, their main base. There's lots of flags are made in China. And see, that's one of the things that tripped me up about 9/11 is they had custom-made gigantic American flags everywhere on all of the buildings. Like the next morning, I swear, I was like, where did all the flags come from? You know, in the airline, now I was off work for almost 10 days after 9/11. So, but when I went back, they gave us little stickers to put on everything, and we weren't allowed to put them on our luggage. But this was an exception. Everybody had to, this was like the Super Bowl. Everybody had to choose their colors and wear your flag because we were at war with somebody, everybody, anybody, whoever the boogeyman of the day was. So this was the exception. Now, we got those stickers were everywhere. I think I wrote about this in Methodical Illusion because this is a kind of a true aspect of what happened. And I know it happened at every airline, too, which is kind of funny because we all do the same stuff. Doesn't matter who you fly for. And this family is so connected that a lot of flight attendants that have read the books have like, tried to figure out what airline I was with, and because it's not part of the story, and I'm not part of the story. It's just the novel that I deliver the 9/11 truth in. So I tried to make it entertaining. I actually got a nice thank you the other day for someone who said, thank you for making the whole research and the whole story of 9/11 so entertaining, and basically said they couldn't put the book down because the event itself is so horrific, and it's even more horrific than what you thought you saw, what you were told, they want you to believe was really going on. And when you find out the truth in book three, you will stop. I keep myself. I just can't believe what I'm writing because I'm writing using the documents that and the findings that a group of us airline pilots and air traffic controllers and myself and some family members. And it's an amazing group of people that have come forward, eyewitnesses.
Well, you know, you were talking about last week's show about are we safer today than before? And earlier this week, I think on Thursday, Brennan, the head of the CIA, testified before Congress. And one of the things he said is that ISIS is expanding. They're growing. They're using the immigration systems to infiltrate various countries. And they're getting bigger and nastier and uglier, and I need more money. 2 weeks ago, Obama said ISIS has less property or less control of stuff in Iraq. We've been bombing their oil wells, and so as a result, they're $25 million less each week than before. Mm-hmm. They're getting smaller. They're shrinking. We're winning the war. So,
which
come
is
on,
it?
Man. Which is it?
Well, that's where we start to look at false flags, and I mean, it can't be both ways. And it's just like this: on 9/11, cell phones did not work at altitude. The airplanes had to be on the ground when the calls were made, period. Now, I'm still getting emails from people all the time that tell me they went and they snuck and tried to use their phone, and only does it work if you happen to be on a certain airplane that is equipped now with some 4G technology. There are out there now, if you've got the smartphone and you're on a specially equipped aircraft, but they're not all, and none of them had that technology in 2001. So people come back and they tell me, I went to the bathroom, I turned my phone on, and it didn't work. And like, yeah, okay, well, I'm not lying to you. I'm telling you, one of the things that caught my attention, besides the flight attendants not following FAA set-in-stone protocol, was those long cell phone calls that they were making.
You know, another thing I saw this week, I think it was on Hot Air, that said that the Taliban now controls more of Afghanistan than they ever had since 2001.
It's as if we've pulled out. And
imagine
we are still
that.
In Afghanistan. I recently saw where some local troops were headed out there, and we're still basically in Iraq helping the Iraqi military as well. We've got our special forces on the ground.
So, Rebecca, I don't feel safer.
Well, okay, so we no sooner get this story loaded up into YouTube about the Department of Homeland Security, and I don't think you are. I know I'm not, and I never have been a conspiracy nut. Now, I can be kind of nutty, and some people don't like the fact that I laugh online. Other people love my laugh, so it can't make everyone happy. I learned that a long time ago flying. You're always going to have a rotten apple. You're always going to have someone that doesn't like something, whether they don't like the way you laugh, the way you talk, the way you smell, the way you wear your hair or your glasses. Now, there's always one somewhere. Hiding amongst the good apples, there's always a bad apple, and they usually have a loud mouth. So, anyway, I'm sidetracking myself. Well, we are not. Are you a conspiracy nut? I mean, I know you have to be kind of nuts to do what you do, but
yes, I think that the NBA has conspiratorially managed to keep the extended the playoffs so that the Warriors wouldn't win.
You think the referees were paid off a little bit?
I don't know. But if I'm going to be a conspiracy theorist, that's where I'm going to go.
Okay.
Sports.
So anyway, we're just not, I don't think Ramjet is either, but I can talk for myself. I am not a conspiracy nut. I do have my eyes wide open. And the red flag on the Orlando shooting for me was that Omar Mateen, which is the supposed accused shooter, his father has pictures all over his Facebook page, which I think he's taken down now, but they're all over the internet because everybody was out there sharing them. Coming out of the State Department, he's relatively well known as a CIA asset, his father. And then as I continued to look at this, first off, the scene, as a first responder, I noticed there were no ambulances at the scene. There were lots of cop cars. And when I listened to the report, it made no sense to me. The police were shooting outside in front of the Pulse nightclub. But then they were saying that this guy, nobody knew he was there until he was inside the nightclub shooting. And that's when they called the police. But then it just doesn't make sense if we're watching a shootout. They're shooting outside. You can see they're outside shooting they say at the guy, but he supposedly wasn't even known to anyone until he was inside shooting people.
Well, supposedly when he was inside, he called 911 himself.
He called many people.
And reported the fact that he was shooting.
He reported that he was supporting ISIS. Now, in the middle of a mass shooting, who? Who would pick up the phone and call 911 operator and tell them anything? Because
like ordering a pizza.
Yeah, exactly. It's just crazy. Someone on Facebook is a gun person and has posted, I mean, you can probably find this pretty easily if you look around, that the gun he had, they claimed it was an AK-47, didn't they? But or AK-15 or AR-15. But that's not what it was. I guess. I don't know. Whatever they said it was, it isn't. It's a semi-automatic gun. So somebody had figured out how many times he had to pull the trigger to shoot over 100 times because he hit 103 people and killed some. And some of them, they claim, had 12 bullets into them. So the guy probably shot 300 times. Because these are the details we're not going to ever get to know. But so they start changing things and putting out crazy stuff. The owner, apparently the owner or the manager of the Pulse nightclub, tweeted on Twitter, "Get out of the Pulse," as if you're in a nightclub with music blaring and semi-nude dancers on the scene. I've seen some of their videos of the entertainment. So you've got this loud music, you've got, strobe lights and disco lights and all of this stuff going on. You've got this guy in there shooting, and the manager gets on Twitter and tweets, run away from the Pulse nightclub, get out and run. Like, people are sitting there in a nightclub on Twitter? I just thought, well, that's really just crazy.
Well, they probably are.
I guess they are. I don't know. To me, I'd be watching those people on the scene, because the shows that people sent me and what kind of entertainment they have there, RuPaul kind of stuff, transvestites and men dressed as women and doing kind of semi-strip acts and singing. It was quite interesting. But the thing that I found very interesting is someone had posted a picture of inside the bar during the daylight. And it was quite white in there. I mean, the walls were, white. And one of the things I saw, because, I'm in a detail person. I'm a part German Shepherd, right? Okay, I saw two cameras, security cameras, on the ceiling, two of them, just behind the guys sitting at the bar. You might be able to Google image inside the Pulse nightclub and see for yourself, because it wasn't very difficult to find a picture inside there. So here I'm thinking, okay, well, are we going to see the footage from the security cameras that were obviously in the ceiling? Or are they going to be put away with the 85 cameras around the Pentagon? I'll probably pick the latter, because this is getting crazier and crazier. Okay, so I start to look at this kid, Omar Mateen. He's an American. He's born and raised here, but his father has the most interesting connections. I found a picture online of him with Charlie Rangel and several other United States congressmen and senators. There's a picture of him coming out of the State Department with the logo on the door, and above the door says, State Department. He's got a briefcase. They claimed on the media that he was a refugee. That's so you'll start hating refugees, by the way, because this is all mind manipulation coming out of the media, the controlled media controlled by the intelligence, because they want you to think this guy was coming from a refugee, because they want you to hate refugees. That's coming next, right? There are Syrian refugees in particular. But this guy, his father is some sort of CIA asset. Now, he could be the heroin pipeline for all we know. I mean, he's here. He claims he is the real president of Afghanistan, and I've heard rumor that he may actually eventually be put in after Hamid Karzai is removed as the president of Afghanistan, interestingly enough. So who's the guy employed by the shooter, supposed shooter? I have to say supposed because I don't know. I heard some girl on a video say that he was shot first and that there were three other shooters involved, and that somebody was holding the door shut so they couldn't get out. So it's kind of interesting that the bouncer, now I first heard on the media, of course everything changes on these kind of crazy things, but I first heard that the bouncer was an armed off-duty police officer. Later on, I saw that he was an ex-Marine for the United States military, and he is a Hindu background. So apparently he's probably from an East Indian parents that have been here for a generation or two, I don't know. But he had been in the United States Marines, and he was there, and supposedly he was armed. I don't know how this guy got through with an assault rifle or any kind of long rifle, and they said he had two or three pistols. You know, I'll say that because the details are constantly changing. But who he was employed by for the last 9 years, G4S, as in Sam Security. Now, G4S Security, you can get your Google on and start looking into this because this is mind-blowing. I've already found a company that bought G4S Security, or G4S Security bought them, back and forth. They changed their name. Wackenhut. Now, George Wackenhut started Wackenhut with two or three other FBI agents in the mid-50s, I believe, maybe early 50s. It's been around for a while. They've run our private prison system for years. They have the security. Now, GS4 and Wackenhut have merged together. So they have the security for our federal courthouses, hospitals, nuclear power plants, nuclear weapon, places where they storage areas. I mean, the list goes on and on. And they are the largest contractor for the Department of Homeland Security, right back to last week's show.
Oh, I don't feel safer.
Yeah, I guess not. And so when you look at this, you think, okay, well, now that's really weird. Why would this guy who had been working, according to what someone said, that he had been working at a courthouse with a gun. He carried a weapon at work. He'd been working for G4S Security for 9 years, and he never had any problems. But his dad, remember, has been in and out of the State Department. He's got all kinds of pictures with himself and numerous politicians. And, of course, those great pictures of coming out of the State Department. And it probably was when Hillary Clinton was there. So we've got this weird connection to this father of this supposed shooter that reeks out and screams out CIA. Okay, so we know about the war on drugs is really the war on anybody that gets in the CIA's way of bringing drugs in and distributing them, right? Correct? Okay, so someone else had gotten astute. Those people are starting to wake up now. See, we're much more awake than 9/11. At the time of 9/11, they caught us with our pants down. We just believed their stories. Not now.
But even still, I mean, you look what happened in this situation. You know, they shoot up a gay nightclub. I mean, there's no question that people died and that, you know, many of them were gays and lesbians. And what does CNN do? They send their two top gay reporters down there to cry their little eyes out and, you know, build the sympathy for that whole situation and paint the picture the way the CIA wants the picture painted. And that is what is really disgusting, because it continues to fool a lot of people. You are right about the fact that people's eyes are opened, because mm-hmm. more people are beginning to see this. You didn't see this on 9/11, but you're starting to see it now. But not enough people's eyes are open, because they are believing whatever it is comes out of the media, and they're just more than happy to. But the other thing that I find ironic is gays and lesbians are buying guns like crazy.
Yeah, well, they should. Everyone should, because things are going to get real dicey here. And it's interesting that when I look at this, now I pull back, I've got people that are putting Craigslist ads for crisis-type actors that was on the Orlando Craigslist a week before this. we see something, and like I said, I had been a first responder. And so you see things that just plain don't make sense, okay? Well, let me just tell you this. I was looking at some videos yesterday, and these are mostly, there are about three or four shots that play over and over and over again. That's all you're going to see. And you don't see any blood. And the people that you do see are really wild. And here's just two of those things I saw in the videos. And this is news footage, that's video that someone there took. Now, I don't know if it was cameramen or if it was people with their iPhones and stuff. But you've got two guys coming out, one on each side of a guy they're carrying. And the guy they're carrying has a tourniquet on over his jeans. So, okay, maybe he's got a little hole in his jeans where they think he was. Why would you put a tourniquet on someone? Here's the thing, in EMS, if you're an EMT or you're an emergency room doctor, you're going to laugh when I say this. When you're in EMT training, here's what they tell you. If you're going to have to put a tourniquet on to stop the bleeding, you want to think twice about that, because when you put a tourniquet on, about 99% of the time, that's where the amputation is going to take place. So if you, it's not, okay, so let me just say this. Pressure bandage is the bandage of choice. The last thing you would want to do is put a tourniquet on someone at the top of their thigh. The second last thing you would do is pick that person up and carry them with a man on each side carrying the guy. But here's the trip. If you watch these videos of the Orlando shooting, I wish I could remember the name of some of the YouTube channels that I was watching. But after they get past where they think the camera is filming them, they set the man down with the tourniquet. And the guy on the right, you can see him. He's like, you know, that hurt his back, or the guy was heavy. He starts kind of shaking out his body like he just lifted a piano or something, you know, and he just wanted to get the blood circulating or something. And then he starts laughing. And the guy with the tourniquet is standing, no longer needing to be held, because the camera action is over. It was like they're acting. And so I thought, well, that's really weird, because first off, the last thing you would want to do is put a tourniquet on some poor guy, especially if you don't know what you're doing. And then it's not very funny. And then why would they set that guy down so he could stand up on his leg that's supposedly been shot? Okay, well, that's a huge red flag. Then there's another scene that you'll see, because there's only like three or four of them. And there's another scene where you see a guy being carried out, and you'll see a gentleman with a red, white, and blue, like a flag shirt on, and a little Drudge, Matt Drudge kind of hat, and a little straw Matt Drudge hat on. And there are six guys, well, there's five men and one woman carrying a guy. And he's not on a backboard, he's not on a stretcher, he's not on a gurney, he's just laying out flat like he's stiff. Because human bodies don't do that. You're not going to see that. The butt's going to go slack. And these guys, and they've got their hands just gingerly under this guy. They're not, obviously the guy's, you know, he looks like he's about maybe 6 foot tall, maybe. I mean, he's pretty good size. So there's three guys on each side, three guys on one side, one guy's up at the guy with the red, white, and blue shirt on, and the Matt Drudge hat's up, kind of just gingerly holding his neck. And I stop the video and I look, and I swear to God, I've seen so many Recessa Annies, so many, you know, in airline training, we deal with them also. And emergency medicine, you deal with resuscitation dolls that they're like a mannequin, but you do your CPR practice on them. And I look at this thing, and the ear has no hole all the way through. It looks like a mannequin. Then I look at the eye, and the eye is staring straight up at the ceiling. The guy's not in pain or anything else. Obviously, he's not passed out, because if he were passed out, he'd be like a sack of potatoes. I mean, he's a wet noodle, and his butt would be going down, but he's completely flat. And these guys are just barely, like they barely are holding him. And then I swear to God, it looks like, in the video, a seam around the neck at the top of the chest. A plastic seam. And if you look at this person, it really truly does look like a mannequin. He's very, very tan. His eye is wide open, just like you would see a mannequin from the side. So when you go to the store, you can look at the mannequin from the side. You'll see what this guy's ear looks like, because it's not a hole all the way, it's just an ear. But mannequins don't have a hole all the way through. It's a doll ear, kind of like a doll ear. And so I saw that, and I thought, well, now this is really, really crazy. And then when you keep adding the final blow to this, is there somebody, and they're pulling somebody out, and this guy is kind of a sack of potatoes guy. Emergency first responders, and every firefighter and every cop is trained as an EMT. They understand first aid, right? And so they all know better than to do this. So none of these cop cars, and there must be 100, maybe more, and they all have their lights shining and flashing, and they're out there. And so none of these guys apparently have had any emergency training at all. None of them go help these guys, but they literally take the sack of potatoes guy, and you'll see this one, he's not stiff, and they throw him into the back of a black pickup that comes, you can hear it goes in, and it rubs, it makes a like rubber sound on the road, like skid.
Well, it's a police truck.
It doesn't look like a police truck. It's black.
It is.
But it's a pickup, and police do not transport patients in the back of a pickup. You just don't. And when the truck leaves, I found something really interesting. One of the guys that had been carrying one of the body of the guy, or the injured person, pushes the truck as if he's making it leave faster, which is really weird. And I couldn't quite tell if anybody got in with that person or if they shut the tailgate. But he was out the scene. That is not correct. And I'm telling you, if the city of Orlando really allows this kind of stuff, you better move out of that town, because God only knows. That's the worst first aid I've ever seen anybody do. And if that was a cop, he broke every single rule of first aid there is. People are not moved unless they're put on a backboard or a gurney, and you apply first aid first, because one of the rules of emergency medicine is do no harm. And if you pick up somebody like that, and it just made me think about that guy with the phony legs at the Boston bombing, with the stumps that his legs, all the meat was blown off of his lower knees, from his knees down, and they picked up that black lady and put her on a gurney. She hardly had any scratches on her. She wasn't hurt near as bad. There was no triage at all at the Boston bombing scene. There's this guy supposedly with his legs blown off and the meat off, so you can see the bone, right? And he's like, you want to think how fast that guy will bleed out? He'll bleed out in about 10 minutes. He would have been the first one you'd scoop and run with. And that's what you would do. You would put him on a gurney and scoop and run and get that guy to get the blood to stop, because what they did, they put him in a wheelchair. Remember this scene? I mean, they put him in a wheelchair. That's like taking a glass of water and pouring it upside down. That's how fast that man would have bled out if you would have done that in real life. That's what made me see in the Boston bombing, uh-oh, there's something wrong with this story. Well, I'm seeing the same thing in Orlando, only in Orlando, we don't have the craft guys with the black backpacks like we saw at the Boston bombing. But and those were mercenaries, the craft mercenary guys, right? That's another rogue operation that's like psychopathic CIA agents that didn't get enough killing in, I guess, when they go and they do this kind of stuff. Those are the guys that had the black backpacks, the kids that they supposedly killed or claimed they were the bombers, had lighter color backpacks with them. So when I saw them throw in a patient to the back of a pickup truck, I don't know, was there horse manure in there earlier? I mean, what was in the back? There's nothing. They don't have a towel. They don't have a blanket. There's nothing. There was no sign of any EMTs or any ambulances at the scene. You guys can go look at all the pictures. You can go look at all the videos. And there's something wrong with that picture. And so what you start to see then is that a lot of the people that you're seeing as victims, including the shooter, have acting experience. The manager of the Pulse nightclub ran the Florida Theatrical Association. He is an actor. He's working with a group off Broadway. And so, again, we've seen this crisis actor. And now, you get your Google on and you look up G4S Security. Go to their homepage and scroll down and look at who their partners are, because one of the most interesting things you're going to see is crisis actors. I forgot the name of the company, but you'll see it. It's not hard to pick out. It's crisis actors. And so you're going to see that the connections here are just way beyond bizarre. We've got connections to his dad with as a CIA asset, to United States politicians, to the hierarchy in Afghanistan, which is, of course, you know, we're talking heroin. So, and then you've got this kid who's been packing a gun, working for G4S Security. He could have been in any one of the places. So we find out, also there's one, I Am Your Ghost, I think was the Montegraf's second YouTube channel, I Am Your Ghost, that he did a little research on Omar Mateen and found him as an actor in a film. And this is a film about how the Afghanis are dealing with the United States occupying their country. And in the trailer leading up to the start of the film, there is some scene involving a transvestite individual in Afghanistan and dealing with that. So here we've got this guy. Now, we found out from his two wives, he's currently married. They have a four-year-old child together, I think, three or four. His ex-wife, who's now living somewhere like in Brazil, said she thought he was gay. But he went on and divorced her and married this other woman four or five years ago. So his current wife, now she's under, you know, possible investigation because, you know, they're trying to say that she knew this, and she's saying, well, you know, he had a screw loose.
The other thing that I find very disturbing in all of this is how quickly Congress, and particularly the Democrats, were ready, lined up and ready to go to take away more of your liberties. I mean, I think on Wednesday they did a filibuster that prevented the Republicans from moving forward with a bill. And what they would like to do, and I heard Joe Manchin, who's the senator from West Virginia, say, you know, the problem here is due process. We need to get rid of due process. Well, you look at 9/11, and immediately what happened is the Patriot Act and things that followed on were designed to take away your freedoms. And this is exactly the same thing. You take away due process. They want to be able, and this is what the Democrats are saying, they want to be able to deny anybody who was on a terrorist watch list to have a gun. Well, okay, most people are familiar with that, and they're not. That's not a problem. That makes sense. But what they're saying is anybody who had been on that list for the past 5 years, even if they'd been removed, because people get on those lists because of, you know, government bureaucratic
mistake,
screwed up, or the no-fly list. If you get on the no-fly list, they want you to not be able to have a gun, and they don't want due process to be able to be part of that equation. Tailor-made situation for exactly what it is they want to do, take away people's freedoms to be able to control them. And their biggest challenge is getting rid of the guns.
Exactly. This is really amazing. But let's just stick this to this for a second. G4S Security, the man, the shooter, Omar Mateen, supposedly, had been working there carrying a weapon. Well, he did. He was trained by them to handle his weapon as a security personnel. He had a history of, according to his ex-wife, of beating her, and she claimed he was mentally ill. We've got a father who's some sort of CIA asset, who's connected to a lot of congressmen and senators. Now, just stop and ask yourself, how many of those guys do you know? How often have you been to Hillary Clinton's State Department? And how connected are you to the country that all of the heroin that's destroying our nation is coming from? And we're starting to see who the players are here. Now, we're supposed to believe that this guy in the middle of this massive shootout, now, the guy on that I saw on Facebook had done the math, and he said, just try to take your Windex, your sprayer, your Windex sprayer for your windows, you know, some kind of trigger thing, and try to do that at 350 times, because that's what the guy would have been doing with his trigger, because that's the kind of gun he had, was he had to pull the trigger each time he shot someone. Now, they're claiming that some of these people were shot 11 and 12 times. Let's say he, you know, got 300 rounds off, right? And he apparently did that in something like 7 minutes, some crazy thing. But during that time, he goes into a bathroom. According, this is the story. It's not my story. I'd probably write a better story. And he's Facebooking photos and status updates to Facebook. And he is calling 911 operators more than once, alleging that he had given his allegiance to ISIS because of our military being over there in his country. Now, here's a reality check for you. That isn't his country. He was born in the United States of America. He has lived in the United States of America. He's 20, I think he was 29. For since he was 20, he's been working for G4S Security carrying a gun at work. So what country is he? He's an American citizen. He's not an Afghani any more than you are if you were born and raised in Kentucky. He's an American. He's been gainfully employed by the largest contractor for the Department of Homeland Security. Just imagine. Who do you think does their background checks? FBI? I don't know. The FBI, by the way, speaking of which, had interviewed this guy twice. In 2011 and again in 2013, I believe it was. And so they found there was nothing wrong with him. Well, my goodness, he's been gainfully employed by the largest security contractor for the United States government, Department of Homeland Security, for 9 years. What would make them think that they should interview him? I mean, he obviously he carried a gun at work, so he should have been okay, right? Well, maybe he was one of those Manchurian kind of candidates. Maybe they were kind of helping on this. So we've got these eyewitnesses now, and it's going to be just like 9/11, where they saw a military-type aircraft, not a commercial plane. There was no logo on it, and we saw it go into the building. It was no commercial plane. Remember the firefighters from the out on the river? They said, when they called into dispatch, that it was a military-type aircraft. It was not. It was not a commercial jet. That's what they said to dispatch when the firefighters from the fireboat called in. So we got all these kind of eyewitnesses. There's a gal who said he was shot first and that there were three other shooters at least. And so here's another thing that doesn't happen in real life. You have a shooting at a situation, let's say a school or a shopping mall or a grocery store or, in this case, a gay bar. You do not leave the bodies laying there for 24 hours, which is what they did. They didn't take most of the bodies out until the following night. That's abnormal. You have to, again, a first responder, here's what we do. Our commitment is to make sure you're alive, and sometimes you could be almost dead. You could have a very, very weak pulse, and guess what we would do? We would not leave you there for 24 hours, and hopefully you die. We would pick you up in what we call the scoop and run. We would put you on a backboard or a gurney, whichever we had closest, and we would run literally down the street, get you in an aid car, and get you into a hospital, scoop and run with you, even if you barely had a pulse or maybe had no pulse at all. That's what CPR is for, to bring you back to life. No way in hell would 50 people, oh, by the way, one of them revived, started out to be 20 dead, turned into 50 dead. Now, who did the count for 20? There's a huge difference of 30 between 20 and 50. So originally they said 20 people were dead. Who counted those 20? Were they stacked up on top of each other? I mean, that's just crazy. So I'm just telling you this. The only other time we saw that, by the way, ever that I've seen it in history isn't the Sandy Hook School. Now, let me just say this. If my child had been shot in that school, they would have had to shoot me to keep me out from getting her body or his body, period. What kind of parents would not go in and make sure their kid was really dead? Only ones that were being paid to pretend they were, I guess. I mean, that made no sense at all because the coroner has to pronounce you dead. And in that case, and just like Orlando, the hospital is like 3 or 4 blocks away from this nightclub. But when you Google search ambulances in Orlando, it'll blow your mind how many of them are right there. And yet none of them showed up at the scene. Now, when you have a mass casualty situation, you have something called triage. And so every one of the first responders, the firefighters, then the police and the ambulance, aid car, paramedics, they're all trained to do triage. What that means is we look at you and you have an injury that means we got to scoop and run. We got to get you in and get some blood for you right now. Or you look at somebody and they just have a grazing or a slight wound or just a bullet hole went through their hand. That's not too bad. We can stop the bleeding and put them down the list. They go last to the hospital. You set up a triage and it never happened there. I never saw it there. And I have never in my life dreamed that somebody would be thrown in the back of a pickup as a patient.
Are you going to mention anything about the shooter Omar and the connection between the guy from Indiana that they arrested in Los Angeles? Or
oh, yeah.
Just throw that off.
No, that's kind of weird. I don't have anything pulled up right away on that, but it's really weird now because what's going on with this, you're going to see the connection that I saw right away. Let me just say this. This is the gay and lesbian month, June. This is the month we celebrate. We have our gay pride parades and all of that jazz. So coincidentally, quinky dink, again, we have this gay pride month going on. We have a target of a gay club. And so now we have everybody feeling sorry for the gays. It's, to me, a psychological operation. It's a manipulation to get people to feel guilty if they don't approve of that lifestyle, if they don't rejoice in that lifestyle, if they are in the least bit backed up about that lifestyle, you're going to feel guilty now because that's what's going on here. Exactly reminded me of Charlie Hebdo. Do you remember in that shooting in Paris where the guy who that supposedly was shot, the cop that was shot by the AK-47 and no blood smashed out when they hit his head with the machine gun. Okay, more another phony shooting. But the Charlie Hebdo, or Charlie Hebdo, was a group of Jewish French cartoonists. And what they were doing was they were making horrible sexual cartoons about Jesus, God, the Pope, anything Christian that recommend, and Muhammad. They would have Muhammad having sex with animals and, you know, just horrific cartoons. And the same with Jesus and God and the Pope. And really just horrific. And what happened when they did this fake shooting there? We were all saying, I am Charlie Hebdo. No, not me. I never said that. The same kind of psychological operation going on here. If you disapprove, if you're uncomfortable with, then there's something wrong with you, homosexuality. It's a manipulation to get you to feel guilty. It's kind of like a little mini Holocaust, like we had in World War II. So if you look at Hitler and you don't see a devil, if you see someone who had good intentions, then oh, you're worse than he was, and you're going to feel guilty, or we're going to shame you into it. That's the kind of manipulation that's going on, and it's hatred, and it's division, and it's all done manipulatively. And that's the thing that I found that was really interesting in looking at this, is that this one is targeted. They're all targeting, by the way, Islamic shooter. even though this guy was a Department of Homeland Security employee for 9 years. And his dad is friends with everyone in Congress and the Senate and the State Department of the United States government. Do you believe that? Can you possibly really look at that and believe that? That he was the shooter? I don't know. If you can, you need to slap yourself again, I guess, because you just don't mix up the CIA, the United States Congress, and the Senate, and the heroin from Afghanistan with this guy and his father, and G4S security. If you do, if you can't see that, you just need to read both of those books over again that I wrote, because you are being manipulated. This is a huge manipulation, and it's a triple whammy. They are making it so that if you don't condone, appreciate, love, and accept homosexuality, gay and lesbians, then there's something wrong with you. And they're going after your gun. You just saw a filibuster, and they're not going to stop. And it's not just Democrats. Republicans are on it, too. So there you go.
But what the guy said that was from Indiana that was supposedly supposed to go down to Los Angeles and do something at the gay pride parade, in, you know, he was picked up by the Santa Monica Police Department because he'd lost his contact. But what he had said was is that he and Omar and four or five others had been trained in West Virginia by the CIA or by
someone,
the rogue element claiming to be the CIA. And those are the ones that were supposedly, you know, participating in this. And if there really were three shooters, well, that explains where they are. But what he also said was, is Omar was supposed to get away. They weren't supposed to kill him.
And, that's right. And Brandy, he used the name Brandy.
Immediately, the FBI came in and took over the investigation and told the Santa Monica Police Department to shut up. And yet the Santa Monica Police Department, if you contact them, they will tell you what they actually did. And the fact that this guy, in the process of confessing to them what it was he was doing, claimed it. Now, I don't know if it's true or not. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But it's at least weird.
But he did know Omar's name. And again, the supposed target was supposed to going to be the gay parade in Los Angeles. It didn't happen because the guy named Dan that he was supposed to go to L.A. and meet, this kid from Indiana, didn't show up at their meeting place. So he got scared and he started looking around. And somebody called the police because they thought he was acting suspicious or something. Or maybe he was knocking on people's doors looking for Dan. I don't know. But yes, there is an element here that you keep seeing three things pop up. CIA again and again and again. Now, a coinky dink, they also show up when I'm looking into all the information that I've been digging through on 9/11. CIA over and over and over again. And it's between book two and book three, I have had the most incredible information come forward. Again, those three letters pop up. Coinky dink? I don't think so. So who's running the show? Well, it's Brennan, isn't it? Is he the CIA head now?
Yeah, he's the CIA.
And so also, here's another interesting thing. 2 days before the Orlando shooting, you saw David Petraeus, who also ran the CIA for a short period of time, who had recently been busted for sharing some 30,000 classified files with a Mossad agent, Paula Broadwell. Top secret. Whoops. Okay, so him and Gabby Gifford's husband, Mark Kelly, announce that they are going on a drive to get gun control in this country. 2 days, maybe a day and a half, prior to Orlando happening, you've got the ex-CIA head, an astronaut, wife of someone who supposedly was shot. I don't know. I don't follow her. So
no, she was shot. There's no question about
who did what, how, and why. It's just not, that's was not where I was at, so I don't have all the details. But her husband and the ex-CIA head are going out to do a gun grab. They want you to lose your guns. And then, boom, coinkydink, we got the Orlando shooter. And what do we find there? CIA, CIA, CIA. So I guess what one of the things people need to really understand is when the media is manipulating you, you're being manipulated into Islamophobia. This is a government that's owned and controlled by Zionist Jews that are manipulating you to hate every Muslim. When you watch Fox News, it's pretty successful. And if you're starting to feel that you're hating them all, then they've got you too. Remember what the CIA said when we have all Americans believing I forget the exact quote. It's in the second book, I think, that I wrote. Believing that everything we tell them basically on TV is true, then and we've got them where we want them. And they've got you if you're believing that. So you've got, now you're being manipulated. You're being manipulated to feel guilty if you are not pro-gay. If you're not wearing your rainbow flag. I think Obama has asked for all the flags to be half-mast over this shooting. But I don't think he did that over Chris Kyle or some of the other heroes of this country that have passed away and really people that should have had that.
Well, he didn't even bother to call Governor Scott, which is just,
oh, right, yeah.
You know.
Well, I don't,
inexcusable, quite yeah. frankly. I mean, he called the president of France
yeah.
During Charlie Hebdo and mm-hmm. during the disco shooting that
mm-hmm.
Went on, but he didn't call
Bataclan,
Governor
yeah.
Scott. I mean,
mm-hmm.
just, you know, he's a Republican, so, you know, screw him.
Yeah, it's really weird when you see all this crazy behavior. Another thing that's really weird about Orlando that I found very weird in, you know, having had a little experience in emergency medicine, on the media, it said all of the local hospitals were on lockdown. And so if you were having a heart attack and you needed to get into a local hospital in Orlando that night, you couldn't get in. They were on lockdown. They had police all around the entrances, and you couldn't get in unless you were coming out of this nightclub. Well, they only had 50 people injured, or 53, I guess. That's not enough to overwhelm, you know, three hospitals. For goodness sakes. I mean, surely one or two of them have to be trauma centers. Orlando has a lot of trauma. So in any given night, they've got gunshot wounds and knife stabbings and things like that. And, of course, in any emergency room you're in, you're going to see heart attacks and people that are, you know, have had, you know, various things happening. And then you've got your flu and sickness and those kind of people that are coming in because they can't, you know, get a grip on their system because they're maybe, you know, fighting a fever or something like that. So here we got all these weird things. No EMS people, no ambulances, the hospitals all around the area on lockdown.
I don't feel safer.
I wouldn't either. And all of this over a Department of Homeland Security contract employee, Omar Mateen. Now, I mean, you just, it's almost too much. If you look at it, I find myself looking and thinking, am I in an alternate universe here? Am I the only one I see this? But, you know, that's I'm not the only one. I see lots of people who are able to see and they're looking closely. And so before we end this, I just want to say this. It is not over. We have seen at least five politicians, maybe six or ten, come out and say, this isn't the last time. They know. They know this is more and more is coming, so prepare
ISIS
yourself.
ISIS is coming.
The ISIS is coming, and we know who's controlling and keeping ISIS alive now, don't we? But isn't it also weird that Russia went in there for about a month or maybe a month and a half and bombed the bejesus out of that Syria, but they haven't been able to get... We've got two superpowers going after these guys. They're just like the ultimate cockroaches. Like, you can't kill them. So anyway, they're a boogeyman that we need to keep alive because that's our economy. It's built and based on war, 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 fear, fear, fear. So looks like we're running out of time, and we're probably going to have much more to talk about. But here, well, that was timing about that DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, and what their employee did here in Orlando. Now, it makes you wonder about the TSA people, right? Yeah. Whoa. We talked about them a little bit, too, last week. So, well, who does their background check? Somebody should look into that.
You know what TSA stands for? Too stupid for Arby's.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's about it. So, anyway, we just we hope you've enjoyed our crazy story here, because I'll hated to do this show because I know everybody on YouTube's doing it. I don't want to do it just to be like everybody else. But to me, I saw such glaring problems that I thought we should talk about that so you guys can look at them too. So thanks for joining us.
We'll see you next week.